Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's a blessing to be here today, this weekend. We are Stephen and Sarah Stelzfus, and we're from Gap, Pennsylvania, in case you don't remember from last night. I know I usually forget. And our son was born with spina bifida. So we want to share that with you today, a little bit of the story and what it has done in our life and some of our experiences and the things that we've learned through that and what God has shown us through that. And just in getting this story together has been really good for us. And just reflecting back over the years, you know, what happened, when it happened, and the emotions we felt. It was just really good for us to go through this. It was a blessing for us. Probably more a blessing for me today to be sharing than for you listening, I would assume, because it does something to us as we're sharing to just really deeply reflect and see what God is doing, even in our own life. So I'll start with a little bit of an introduction of our life before James came on board. We grew up Amish. For me personally, I grew up in a home where on a farm, and I can say I had a real good, you know, life. My parents treated me really well, and I could, you know, pretty much life was as I wanted it, you know, as a young Amish boy or whatever. I can't say that. We got married and we had our first child and life continued to go well. It, you know, used to seem like I had my life under control. I was starting a business and that was going well. It just seemed like whatever I wanted to do, I would just do it, and I became pretty, you know, I thought I could do it. I could handle this thing. And so, yeah, I thought I had my life under control, but God had something else in mind. And we'll share more of that as we go. Before we get into it, or as we're just getting into the story of James, there's a little story I want to say. It's kind of a funny story, but it kind of shows a little bit, usually to me, what my train of thought was. So when our first son was born, I remember after the birth, you know, we were going through this thing all night long, and, you know, then finally he arrives, and I went upstairs in bed, and I took a long nap. It was like an all-night affair, you know, and this was just great. And when our second son was being born, we didn't know anything about it, so I was already thinking, how I can't wait till I can go up and take that nap, and this is all, you know, in the past, you know, the relief of a new life. But, God had something else in mind.
Yeah, as Stephen said, that we didn't know anything about the defect before he was born. Pregnancy went very well. He was born at home on September 3rd, 2018. At 3 o'clock in the morning, and almost immediately the midwife noticed that something's wrong, and she informed us that he has spina bifida, and we had not remembered of ever hearing that word before. We were just like, what is spina bifida? And we asked her what it is, and she just gave a brief explanation of how they sometimes have a little trouble walking. She was busy taking care of things and didn't talk real much. And we didn't know what to say or think at that time. And she pretty soon told us that we'll need to be transferred to the hospital. But we did have a little bit of time there before they left. And one thing I remember very good, yeah, is I was holding him, and I was holding his hand and squeezing his hand. He would squeeze it back. It was very special to me. And, before they left for the hospital, the nurse said a prayer that I really clearly remember as well. She said to God that this was a surprise for us, but not for him. And yeah, that was just kind of the first wave of emotion that went over me.
So I went with James as he got transported from, first we got transported to Lancaster and then to Hershey. One thing I still remember at that time was when the medic and the ambulance crew was there, and he was telling me he has strong legs, and I was like, you know, great. You know, at that point I was pretty much trying my very best just to convince myself that this is not going to be bad. It's just, you know, we're going to get to the hospital. I had kind of thoughts that, you know, we'll just go to the hospital, we'll have a surgeon, we'll be home, and everything's going to be normal again. I even thought of, you know, I was questioning, should we pack our bags or not? Because we were so, like, just completely new to this whole thing. So, I found myself in Hershey Hospital on the 7th floor in the NICU, and I felt very alone, and I was up until this point in life, I think I was in the hospital one time before that, and that was after we were married, and I still remember kind of trying to keep this trend going. I'm going to stay out of the hospital. It wasn't even for visiting. I was in the hospital one time, unlike what you were saying earlier. I didn't know anything about hospital life. I didn't even know what hospitals looked like, hardly. I mean, one time in a local little hospital is where I had been, but all of a sudden I was in Hershey Hospital, this huge hospital, 7th floor in a room. At that time, I didn't have a cell phone, so I was trying to make use of the phones, and I didn't know what I was doing. But it was a very trying time at that time.
Yeah, so then at that point of time, I was at home with my mom, and we were just waiting to hear from Stephen or where they're at or what's going on. Finally, at about 10:30 or so, he called us and left us know where they're at and what's going on. And then me and my mom headed in to Hershey. And we got there and went up the elevator. And just as we got off the elevator, the doctors and James were right there, just ready to head down for surgery. So that was special to see him leave yet before he went for that first surgery to close the spine. And yeah, that first week was kind of an emotional roller coaster for us, just with the new hospital life and just trying to grasp the reality, I guess, that our son has a defect that might affect him for life. It's a lot to process. After the first week, they thought he was doing pretty well, that we'll probably be able to head home. And then just soon after, they said that his oxygen levels started to drop. And they didn't really know why, but yeah, he had the oxygen they needed to supplement with oxygen. And that continued into the next week. And when he was 2 weeks old, he needed a shunt. So they had that surgery, and they had thought that that might take care of some of the oxygen issues, but it didn't. The oxygen issue continued for the next 2 weeks without really any improvements. So they were coming to their last resort, I guess, and just said that we'll probably be needing to put a trach in. And so yeah, that was the next blow that we had.
So there was a family that we had gotten acquainted with while we were in the hospital that the situation looked way worse than ours. We had a child that had spina bifida. Maybe, you know, we were coming to the reality that you know, he might have a wheelchair, and there's some complications that go with this and things like that. But we had seen their child, and in fact, later on, their child actually died in the hospital. But it was a really bad case. I don't even remember exactly what it was, but either they put a trach in or they said they're going to have to put a trach in this child. And this was like, whoa, making a hole in your throat, you know? And, you know, the surgery that goes with that, the scar tissue that, and we were like, you know, that would be bad if we would have to put a trach in. And then all of a sudden, and that was completely out of our radar. We didn't realize that we would be faced with this, you know, but we knew we were becoming aware of the fact that there's something like a trach. If you're not familiar with a trach, it's basically a hole you put in your throat and put a tube in your throat to start breathing, to help you breathe, because he had this oxygen problem that was going on, and that was why they were starting to suggest that, you know, we might have to put a trach in, and that was just quite a blow. So we had a meeting with the doctors, all the doctors kind of that were part of that, the people that were taking care of you know, that would put the trach in. And we had a meeting with all the doctors. Our parents came, and they were showing us, you know, how the trach would work out and what it would be to care for and why they think, you know, all the tests that we had been doing up until that point. And I remember asking the doctors, I was like, you know, like, wouldn't there be any way that we could just wait for a couple more weeks and just supplement with oxygen and see what happens, if you went out grud or what would happen? And one of the lead doctors at that time said, no, there's no way. Pretty much a flat no, that he don't expect it to get better at all. And they seemed like they were kind of pushing to get this thing done. And so we were, you know, like, you know, what should we do? We knew we had the final authority, but should we do it or shouldn't we? I think we decided to let it go for a week or two yet. You know, we decided kind of on our own that, you know, we'll let it go a little bit, but pretty much consented to doing the procedure. And then, like, the next day, it started getting better. We know people were praying, and it was really a miracle as anything that we can really comes an explanation to. And so the next day, it started getting better. And I think the doctor that was saying that we would definitely need a trach, or one of them, was trying to figure out what's going on a little bit that next day or two. And then a week later, we were going home and on oxygen. Up to that point, we were 5 weeks in the hospital. And so we came home and with oxygen still, but a lower amount, and they realized it's getting better. We had a pulse ox, oxygen tanks, and yeah, we had to learn, you know, all the different things that go with spina bifida, the different cares that go with it. For those of you that have spina bifida here, know what I'm talking about, but it's, you know, there's quite a bit of things that go on that you wouldn't realize if you didn't experience it. But here, most people experience these kinds of things, so it's not new, I think. But anyway, yeah, we came home, and then he was on oxygen yet for, was it like 5 months, something like that, at home, so.
Yeah, so those first 5 years then, or the next 5 years, he's now actually 6, going on 7. But yeah, We started therapy pretty soon after he was a bit, or like a half year old or so, we started with therapy. And we did a lot of therapy the next 5 years with the help of a caregiver. Yeah, she was a caregiver we really, really appreciated. She was very intentional about her time that she spent with him. It wasn't just about getting therapy done, but loving him and taking care of his emotional needs, and yeah, her love for him was very outstanding. So yeah, we really appreciated what she did. Mm-hmm. He did make slow progress over the years, and therapy definitely helped with tightness. And yeah, we got a wheelchair for him then when he was 4, I think. And yeah, has had a wheelchair since, and also a hoverboard, which he loves getting around with on that. That gave him the chance to go as fast as his brother could go, so that was quite the experience for him when he was able to do that for the first time. But yeah, since he's doing school now, therapy slowed down a lot. We are homeschooling, and yeah, I find with that it brings a lot of opportunities to build relationships with him and have him help me in the kitchen. And he almost daily asks what he can make. He just loves being in the kitchen and cutting vegetables and making cookies, and especially likes to make things that his daddy likes. And yeah, I just find it a great time to build relationships with him. A few things that make his face really light up is if I tell him that we're going to have pizza or soft pretzels. He has a little bit of a challenge with eating, so if it's something that tastes good to him and goes down well, it means a lot to him, or it's a good day for him. One other thing that he really thrives on, which we probably all do, is friendships. In the past year, he had a friend that was about his age, and she's from our church, and so we've seen each other quite often, and they spent a lot of time together. And it didn't even really matter what they were doing, it was more if they were together, and they just loved being together. And she was just kind of friend that just stayed by his side. And then a few weeks ago, this family went overseas to do mission work. And yeah, I was curious how he's going to respond to that. And yeah, his reaction was like a shattered heart. It was so hard for him. It was kind of like what he lived for. But yeah, he is moving on, trying to make new friends now. But it was just interesting from my observation, it appeared that a close friend, or not having a close friend, has more an effect on him than being on a wheelchair. Another thing that he loves is singing. He loves singing music and has a singing gift for sure. But I wanted to add to that I definitely seen that change already. He won't be singing as much if the spirit that is flowing from his mother is not coming from the correct source. If I'm getting frustrated or, things aren't going well, then his singing isn't there so much. So, yeah, on the other hand, if I see my dire need of God every day and abide in him, then, the fruits are usually evident. And the journey continues. It is again and again that we come to a place of, just not knowing what we're going to do or how to handle a situation, and we come broken before the Lord and surrender the situation to him again. And he just always shows us that he is trustworthy. We don't need to take this on our own shoulders, for sure. And the Lord continues to sanctify us through this journey. It's been very good for us. And I think for what it did for us, it's not exactly something that we wish on anyone, but at the same time, it's not something that we pity someone with because of what it did to us. And I think if we humble ourselves before God and accept what he wants to teach us through this, it can be a big blessing.
So that's kind of where we're at as far as our story goes with, the challenges and the handicap and James. But with this story, I would also like to share a little bit what God has done and especially me through this story, and some thoughts that come with it, and some scriptures that have been a blessing to me over the years, and what God has shown me through this situation. I would like to turn to John 9, 1 to 5. You can turn with me if you wish. John chapter 9, verses 1 to... I'm just going to read from 1 to 3. It says, "Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, 'Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?' Jesus answered, 'Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him.'" And so, I'd like to pause a moment on the question that the disciples asked Jesus: who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And then just think about that question a little bit. You know, why did the disciples ask that question? Is that even a valid question? You know, Jesus corrected and said, neither of this, because, it was so that the works of God can be seen. But as I pondered over this a lot already, and there's another story in the scriptures, but before I go to that story, let me go there. It says in John chapter 5, it's where Jesus came to the pool at Bethsaida, and then where an angel came down and stirred the water, and whoever got into the water first was made well. And so there was a certain man that was that had an infirmity for 38 years, and Jesus, you know, they had a little dialogue, but Jesus healed him. And he said, "Take up your bed and walk." And he did. And then Jesus withdrew from him. And later on, when Jesus met him again, it says in John chapter 5, verse 14, it says, "After Jesus findeth him in the temple, he saith to him, 'Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you.'" And so how do we reconcile what Jesus said here and what Jesus said in John chapter 9? As I was pondering over this thing some, you know, and it seems pretty evident to me that, you know, sin does have consequences. Of course, you know, we can't say that everything, you know, in our bad situations that we're in, it's not necessarily always that we've sinned, but sin does have consequences. I like to go back to the Garden of Eden and think about that a little bit. You know, I don't know how you picture the Garden of Eden or how perfect it would have been. I was pondering over this, and I was thinking, you know, did people stub their toes, and did they have pain? Did Adam and Eve have pain? You know, would have it been possible for handicapped people to be in the Garden of Eden? You know, it's kind of a, you know, we don't know that. We don't have to answer that question. But I think we can think about the Garden of Eden as perfect almost, or probably perfect. I don't know what you all think. But we do know another thing, that there was a fall. We know that when the devil came to Adam and Eve and they believed what he said, and it says, I guess another way of putting it, it was the works of the devil, what the devil did there, and they believed him, and there was a fall, and we know that corruption came into the world, and today, you know, it's raging, and it's been, you know, ever since the fall. So, I think you could probably ask almost anybody today in the world and ask him about the broken world today. You know, this world is broken. You could probably ask any secular person, you know, do you think the world is broken? I think most people agree there's something wrong. There's something missing. There's something that's not quite right. There's nobody likes wars. You know, us in our handicapped states, like it there's something wrong with that, right? There's something not perfect. And so we know that happened. So I'd like to go back to that question that I asked, that the disciples asked, who sinned, this man or his parents? And was it a valid question? And I personally believe it was a valid question. You know, so here at Penn Valley Retreat this weekend, and usually when we have this handicap seminar, there's a lot of wheelchairs here. There's blind people here. There's people with all kinds of situations. And T1, as we just heard. And, you know, I have to ask myself, for our situation, you know, was it because of my sin that this happened to James? And as I, you know, think about that, maybe it was the case, maybe not, but I'm not sure if that's really the point. You know, the point is there is a fallen world. Our sins are, the brokenness came from man's fall in the beginning somewhere, I think. And there's a fallen world. You know, what are we going to do about it? It'd be a question I guess we could ask. So, let's go back to that response again to the question when the disciples ask, who sinned, this man or his parents? And then Jesus answered, he said, neither this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be made manifested. And so he wasn't too concerned whether it was this man that sinned or his parents. He said it wasn't this man or his parents. But, you know, we know it came from a broken world. But he said, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. And so he's using this situation to glorify his works. There's other translations that say a little bit differently, and I liked it as I looked at four different translations. The one says, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. The other one says, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. And another one says, so the power of God could be seen in him. And then one more says, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. So we have three words. We have manifested, displayed, could be seen, or revealed in him. And so we, you know, well, I'll come back to that again later a little bit. So in John chapter 5, it says, where that happened, where Jesus said, go, sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. Later on, he says, in John chapter 5, 16 and 7, it says, for this reason the Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to kill him because he had done these things on the Sabbath. We know that the Jews and the context there was that he was doing these things and he was breaking their laws of the Sabbath, and but he was trying to reveal who God was. But Jesus answered them. He said, my Father has been working until now, and I have been working. And there we see it again. God is working. Even if this may have been from this man's sin, God is still working. And so, we see that Jesus went throughout all the land and he was healing the people. And, you know, that's what we know Jesus to do. That's what the people would have. I mean, he was gathering huge crowds around him. I like to read a section in Matthew 4. It says, And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all kinds of sicknesses and all kinds of disease among the people. Then his fame went throughout all Syria, and they brought to him all sick people who were afflicted with various diseases and torments, and those who were demon-possessed, epileptics, paralytics, and he healed them. So I would like to bring this a little closer home again and think about this. How does God want to use us on our hopeless situations, on our wheelchairs, or when we're blind or deaf? Is there something God can do with these situations? Or are we just a broken, cast out people? Or what does God want to do with this? You know, you got to ask those questions. And so, you know, what really are the works of God? Or what was God really trying to accomplish when he said that the works of God might be revealed in him? What really were the works of God? And I come back to this thing. You know, I believe the works of God were that the people would believe in him. And it was to destroy the works of the devil. So, John chapter 6, another section, 28 to 29. You may turn there if you like. You don't have to follow me with all these references. I'm going through different scriptures. But it says, then he said to them, they said to him, "What should we do that we may work the works of God?" Jesus answered and said to them, "This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he sent." So God was really trying to get them to believe in him and to believe that, you know, he actually is the Son of God. Another place in John 10, it says, If I do not do the works of my Father, do not believe me. But if I do, though you do not believe me, believe the works, that ye may know and believe that the Father is in me and I in him. I'm going to continue the reading in a section in 1 John 3. It says, "And you know that he was manifested to take away our sins, and in him there is no sin. Whoever abides in him does not sin. Whoever sinned has neither seen him nor known him. Little children, let no one deceive you. He who practices righteousness is righteous, just as he is righteous. He who sins is of the devil, for the devil has sinned from the beginning." This is where I like to mark a little bit. "For this purpose, the Son of Man was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil." And he wants us to believe in Jesus. The works of the devil in the beginning, he wants to destroy that. It doesn't mean that the works of the devil, the only way to be destroyed is to be made whole as in walking. For sure not. But it does mean that we can believe and our hearts can be made whole and right with God again. And so, I wanted to just express a little bit my own journey with our son James and why this means so much to me. It's because before James came into my life, as I shared in the beginning, I was very self-centered. I was not necessarily surrendered to God. I did cover it up in the disguise of being a good person. But I was very self-centered. I was going down a path of pursuing wealth and prosperity, and I believe I was at the part of becoming into a snare with that. I am usually really sad when I look back at all the pride that's in my life and continue to have to deal with that as I go through this life in subtle ways as pride wants to bore its way in. It's something that, you know, I had a good life growing up, and I don't, and I so thankful. But there was something that was being brought. I mean, I was creating this very self-motive thing. So until James came into my life, I don't remember. I mean, maybe one time that I actually felt a need for God. And once James came into my life, it just really brought something into our life that, wow, I really need something. And at that time, I didn't think about it. But looking back, I realized that's what happened. The control mindset that I had at the time when James was born was brought to trial. And as, I'm sorry, what's your name? Merlin said this morning, you know, I had a choice. Am I going to become bitter, or am I going to let myself become better, or am I going to surrender to God? And thankfully, I chose the latter. There was simply nothing I could do about the situation, and my heart became softer. People could start speaking into my life, and seeds started growing. You know, I look back and I cringe where I could possibly be at without this situation in my life. I don't know. So, you know, I do believe that God could still heal James. He could heal every one of us in here. He could, you know, if Jesus would be at this place, you know, as he was in the New Testament, and you know, if he would come and touch each one of us, we could be healed physically. But what we really want is that he touches each one of our hearts and he heals us and takes away our sins and makes us a new person. I am saddened usually many times as to why, you know, I had to go. Why did this have to happen in order for us to, for me to see the truth? You know, why does my son have to go through this in order for that to happen? And, you know, maybe God would have worked something else out, you know, wouldn't have been another way. But what's a better thing for a child to do for his parents than to bring him to the Lord? Intentionally or unintentionally. So some closing thoughts here. Will you allow the works of God to be revealed in you? You know, we know that the works of God were completed at the cross, and that all who believe in him will be saved. You know, so I would like to encourage each one of us here, may we enter into this work in whatever situation we find ourselves in. And just perhaps we have a greater opportunity to be engaged in this work in our situations than majority of the people. Because, you know, we know the strength is made perfect in weakness. God's strength is made perfect in weakness. So I will end by saying, may the works of God be revealed in us.